DBT, otherwise known as dialectical behavior therapy, is a new form of therapy utilized for many psychological disorders today. It was first developed by Dr. Marsha Linehan at the University of Washington. Dialectical behavior therapy is commonly used for persons with borderline personality disorder, as well as individuals who struggle to manage their emotions. It is a combination of mindfulness meditation and cognitive behavioral therapy. Today, we're going to speak with Shiri Van Dyke about dialectical behavior therapy. Shiri is a full-time DBT practitioner in Newmarket, Ontario. Stay tuned for the interview with Shiri. Thank you for coming onto the show, Shiri.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So can you start off by telling us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, I am a social worker. My training is, I have a master's degree in social work from the University of Toronto. I've been working with people with severe mental health problems, treating them with psychotherapy for about the last 10 years or so. I have done most of my non-school training, my non-scholastic training, has been at the Center for Addiction and Mental Health in Toronto.
Okay.
But really, it's just been on-the-job learning. Like I think most of us probably learn. That's how I've kind of gotten into DBT and learned most of my skills.
Okay. So when did you first start to use DBT in your practice?
Pretty much from the get-go. So 10 years ago, actually probably, let me think, sorry, 7-8 years ago almost, I was doing my practicum for my social work degree, and I ended up at Southlake Regional Health Center, which is the hospital in Newmarket. That's where I am now. So I was doing my placement there, and my field instructor was just starting a DBT group. And so I had had some basic training before that, and so got more involved with DBT at that point with her, and it just kind of flourished from there.
And what was it that drew you to DBT when you were first training and starting out?
What was it that drew me there? I think just its broad applicability to so many different illnesses. So, I mean, it was originally created to treat borderline personality disorder. But when I started learning about it, the skills were so applicable just not just to mental health problems, but just to help people live a better quality of life in general. I mean, I actually started using the skills myself because they're just so helpful. So I think that's really what drew me there, is that it just seemed to be a healthier, happier way of living your life. So it only made sense to be using the skills myself and to then teach these skills to my clients as I saw them for whatever the illness was that they were dealing with.
And so just before we dive into talking about how great it is, maybe we can talk a little bit more about what it is. So we're talking about...
Probably a good idea.
So we're talking about dialectical behavior therapy. So could you tell us a little bit about what it is and how it's used?
So DBT, as we call it for short, was originally designed to treat borderline personality disorder. Its creator is Marsha Linehan, who is a psychologist who works out of Seattle, Washington. And in the, I think in the 80s, she was working with clients who were suicidal, who were severely suicidal. And she and her team were doing research on using cognitive behavior therapy, or CBT, with those clients. And then later on, she narrowed her focus specifically to clients with borderline personality disorder. They found, though, that in using CBT to treat borderline personality disorder, that it just wasn't very effective because people with the diagnosis of borderline are emotionally dysregulated people. They have difficulties managing their emotions. And part of that is a higher sensitivity to emotional experiences. And so people with borderline were actually finding the focus on change that's inherent to the CBT treatment. They were finding it very invalidating.
Because they're not recognizing their feelings, but more trying to change it. Is that why it's invalidating?
Exactly, yeah. Because the focus was so much on changing as opposed to just validating and acknowledging and accepting feelings, emotional experiences, physical physical sensations and thoughts. You know, the focus on in CBT is really about changing those experiences in order to modify your mood in some way, right?
Yes.
And so, and there were a few other reasons that Marcia and her team believed that the CBT wasn't effective for borderline as well, but that was one of the main ones. And so, because of that ineffectiveness, they developed DBT. Marcia and her team. And so DBT, actually Marcia at one point, I heard her say, I think it was in an interview, she had mentioned that she would have actually called dialectical behavior therapy cognitive behavior therapy, but the name was already taken. So it is a type of CBT. I get the question all the time about what's the difference between CBT and DBT. The easiest way to conceptualize this, so of course it's much deeper than this, but for people who don't have a lot of experience with both therapies, really DBT is CBT with the addition of mindfulness and acceptance techniques. So again, there are a lot of other differences other than that, but that's kind of the core issue. The core difference is that DBT helps clients first to accept who they are, what they feel, what they think, and obviously helps the therapist to accept the client as they are as well. And then over time, the therapist helps the client learn to be more accepting of herself. And mindfulness, of course, is a big part of this. So, do you want me to get into a little bit about what mindfulness is?
Yes, please.
Okay. So mindfulness actually has its roots in Zen Buddhism, but it's an extremely useful technique that doesn't have to have any kind of religious overtones to it. Basically, the definition of mindfulness is doing one thing at a time in the present moment with your full attention and with acceptance. So it's really about living your life in the present moment and working toward bringing acceptance to whatever you find in the present moment, whatever your experience is. Again, whether that's a thought, a feeling, a physical sensation, an argument you're having with somebody, whatever it happens to be, we work on not judging it, on just being accepting or acknowledging of that experience.
Now, that seems to be applicable to anyone, especially in our society today.
It definitely is.
Yeah.
So, again, I mean, this just goes back to what drew me to DBT in terms of it just being a healthier, happier way of living your life, regardless of any kind of mental health problem you may or may not have. So this is why the skills are just so applicable to anybody dealing with any kind of emotional issue, even if it's not related to a mental health problem. So, just day-to-day experiences that we have. You have a difficulty with a coworker or with a client of your own at work, and you can bring mindfulness and other skills in to help you deal with that situation.
And so mindfulness on its own is the acceptance part, right, of DBT?
Yes, that's part of it. But mindfulness is definitely, one of Marcia's, she's got four modules or sets of skills that we teach people in DBT. And the very first set of skills that people learn in DBT is the core mindfulness skills. So that's the big, big focus. And everything else but if you think of mindfulness as like the foundation, everything else gets built on top of that.
Okay. And so the CBT that's part of DBT, or cognitive behavioral therapy, is part of DBT after the mindful part.
Yeah. So if you think of... So CBT, we conceptualize as we look at the connection between people's thoughts, their emotions, and their behaviors, and that if you change one of those areas, that's going to have an effect on the other two, right? So, for example, if you change the way you're thinking about a situation, that's going to change your emotions and your behaviors in the situation, and so on. So DBT has that same underlying idea that those three things are connected, but it basically... talks about those things in a different language. And another big difference between DBT and CBT is that DBT is a principle-driven therapy, mm-hmm. whereas DBT is a protocol-driven therapy. So mm-hmm. if you think of somebody who maybe has obsessive-compulsive disorder, for example, mm-hmm. and if you're a CBT therapist, there's a very specific protocol that you're going to follow in order to treat the person using CBT to treat the person with OCD. There's too many initials here. So you're going to, for example, start off treating that person by teaching them relaxation techniques to manage their stress and anxiety more effectively. Right. Then usually what we do is get people to make a hierarchy mm-hmm. where they rank the obsessions and compulsions that are most distressing for them.
Okay.
And then we would do exposure therapy with that person to help gradually reduce the behaviors that they're engaging in.
Okay.
So that's a CBT therapist's perspective. From a DBT perspective, so that's a very protocol-based, it's very rigid and structured.
Right.
A DBT therapist is going to look at that same person and certainly use some of those same techniques. So it would definitely teach people relaxation techniques and stress management, and actually mindfulness would certainly come into play there,
mm-hmm.
Accepting the person's anxiety as opposed to fighting it,
mm-hmm.
Helping them learn to use mindfulness in order to reduce the anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
But the skills that we would teach that person would be really more flexible, so that, yes, they could use it with their OCD symptoms, but they can also use it with a lot of other problems that they're dealing with in their life as well.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not as structured and rigid as CBT is.
Yeah. One thing that I read about was DBT allows the patient to learn to bear pain more skillfully. And that I thought was really beautiful.
Yeah, and that's one of Marcia's underlying goals of DBT. The other being to live a life worth living, to create a mm-hmm. life worth living for
yes.
themselves. Yeah, so bearing pain more skillfully is really about acknowledging that we can't get rid of the pain that we have in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, pain is just a part of the human experience. Especially for people who have emotion dysregulation problems or borderline personality disorder,
mm-hmm.
they get focused on or stuck on trying to get rid of the pain. They think that people who don't have these problems in their life are happy all the time, don't
mm-hmm.
experience the pain that they're experiencing.
That's not true.
Pardon me?
And that's not true.
No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
So the idea of learning to bear pain skillfully is about teaching them that, of course, their lives are going to have pain in them, and they need to learn to accept the pain in their lives so that they can use skills to help them deal with the pain, manage the pain more effectively.
Mm-hmm. Instead of denying it and trying to change it like
exactly.
CBT would be doing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because that often makes it so much more painful, right? When we try and push it away, when we don't accept the pain in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Marcia actually says, when we don't accept the pain in our lives, that's what creates suffering.
Mm-hmm. Especially if there are some underlying issues with a past that's not validated, or just issues that's been denied. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's often where people, where the emotional difficulties come from, right? Is the environment that was invalidating usually when people were growing up.
Mm-hmm.
So people grow up in an invalidating environment, receiving messages that their experience is wrong or invalid, or their experience is minimized or judged in some way,
mm-hmm.
then they end up learning that there's something inherently wrong with them.
Mm-hmm.
They end up learning that they can't trust their own emotions and thoughts and beliefs and that sort of thing. So, yeah, so that's when people develop problems like borderline personality disorder or general emotion dysregulation problems.
Mm-hmm. Now, without DBT, how is this normally treated, something like borderline personality disorder?
Well, people who don't have DBT training, I mean, there, first of all, are lots of other ways, of course, of treating borderline personality disorder.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how effective they are.
Yeah.
Like CBT, right? That's why DBT ended up coming into creation, is because CBT wasn't that effective.
Right.
But people still use CBT to treat borderline personality disorder. There are a couple of other therapies. I don't know a whole lot about them, but one of them is called mentalization.
Okay.
Which to me sounds very much like dialectical behavior therapy. or at least very much like mindfulness. Mm-hmm. And it helps people focus on the present moment with acceptance, and also really focuses on helping the person to look at things from another person's perspective. Mm-hmm. So being able to kind of step out of their shoes and into the other person's shoes to see where they're coming from. Mm-hmm. So that's mentalization therapy. There's also a new therapy, but that they're doing more research on it nowadays in terms of using it for borderline personality disorder. Mm-hmm. And I believe it's something like transference therapy.
Okay.
Something like that. And honestly, I don't know, as you can tell, I don't know a whole lot about that one either.
Yeah.
But it really focuses on using, my understanding of it is that it focuses on using the therapeutic relationship to help people to develop better skills and better interpersonal relationship skills.
Okay. So right now, if someone was diagnosed with borderline personality disorder, they would be going to a therapist. Let's say they would undergo CBT and then possibly medication.
Yeah, medication tends to not work so great. Mm-hmm. I mean, it'll certainly work if quite often, of course, with somebody who has emotion dysregulation problems, they're also going to be depressed, mm-hmm. or they're also going to have problems with anxiety. So you can treat those symptoms with medication sometimes quite effectively, mm-hmm. but the core of the illness, the borderline personality disorder part, really isn't that treatable with medication,
yeah.
from my understanding. Again, I'm not a psychiatrist, but mm-hmm. working closely with these individuals, that's my understanding. But yes, definitely people with borderline personality disorder, they are referred quite often for psychotherapy. Now, whether they get, you know, appropriate assistance or, you know, in terms of effective assistance, because not a lot of people are trained in one of the more effective therapies for BPD. And also, the treatment for borderline personality disorder usually is going to be pretty lengthy.
Yeah.
And so our little community agencies and our hospitals that are underfunded, we can't provide the kind of therapy that most people with borderline personality disorder actually require in order to really make it a big difference in that illness.
And how long, on average, would that be?
I can't really give you an average. It really depends. It depends, I think, on how old the person is when they come in for therapy. If, you know, if they've had 50 years of this pattern, mm-hmm. it's going to be much harder to break than a person who's coming in at the age of 20.
Yeah.
But it also depends on, comorbid diagnoses. Like, does the person have a social anxiety disorder? Do they have OCD? Do they have depression?
Mm-hmm.
Often substance abuse. Problems go hand in hand with borderline personality disorder.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously the more troubles they have, the longer it's going to take to treat. And of course, then there's just the severity of the BPD itself.
Right.
So, you know, symptoms are going to vary from person to person. Someone who's not quite as severe might only need, you know, a year of therapy mm-hmm. versus 5 years of therapy for someone who has more severe symptoms.
Mm-hmm. And so with something like this, would DBT be covered under OHIP, or is it something that people have to pay out of pocket?
So the clinic that I work at South Lake Regional Health Center, there are two of us that have been trained in DBT.
Mm-hmm.
And so our services through the clinic are covered by OHIP,
okay.
but we have a maximum of 12 sessions to work with.
Okay.
And we have a waiting list of about 6 months long for our services.
Oh, wow, really?
Yeah. So, I mean, yes. OHIP does fund some services through hospitals.
Yes.
I don't know of any other hospitals actually in our area where people have had DBT training in terms of, a psychotherapy clinic where people could get DBT.
Mm-hmm.
So I think really people, and in addition to that, of course, the length of treatment, right?
Right.
So for somebody with BPD to come to my clinic, I might be able to see them for 12 sessions. And then what do they do?
And then
right?
What?
If they don't have coverage for private therapy, yeah, then they have to pay for themselves to continue therapy with a private therapist.
Oh, they can't continue with you?
No, we are a clinic. We're a small clinic in the hospital where we have a maximum number of sessions. We have a maximum of 12 sessions usually to see people.
Really? So, now, that could be really disruptive to someone's therapy,
exactly,
right?
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, you start seeing somebody for therapy, you start to develop that therapeutic relationship, and then there go your 12 sessions, and and no, sorry, but you're out of luck. So it is pretty difficult for people to get the help that they need, especially when it's something that really should be long-term treatment.
Yeah, and is that a common theme across different hospitals, or just it's special to your practice?
I can't really answer that. I mean, I know from our interactions that do happen sometimes with the other hospitals that their waiting lists are a problem as well. So I would imagine that they have a maximum number of sessions. I don't know what they are.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, I know the, you know, some hospitals in our area don't even have psychotherapy clinics at all.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like, actually, I know, I believe Barry, they don't have a, like we're called the brief therapy clinic at Southlake. They don't have an equivalent to us. So if you need psychotherapy, you can't even go get it at the hospital. It's not even an option there.
Yes.
So I think it just really depends on the area that you're in.
Mm-hmm.
But it is definitely, it's a problem in terms of the shortage of therapists that are covered by OHIP
mm-hmm.
in hospitals.
Now, why is there that cap for you? Specifically?
Well, because our waiting list is 6 months long.
Oh, so it's just to be fair to the people who are waiting.
There's just such a, you know, there's only 3.3, I think, full-time employees in our clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And so our, you know, if we were keeping people indefinitely, our waiting list would be, you know, a year or 2 years long.
Yeah. That is really too bad, eh, to move
it
people
is.
Along.
Yeah, but it's
then...
just that same old song, the lack of funding, right?
Yeah.
That's what it comes down to.
Hmm. So we talked a lot about borderline personality disorder. What about other conditions that DBT can be applied to?
Yeah, well, like I mentioned, I mean, the skills are so generalizable that they're really applicable to many, many different illnesses.
Mm-hmm.
And since Marcia Linehan originally created DBT, there's been a lot of research going on in using DBT for other illnesses. So I actually did a trial myself. I conducted a randomized controlled trial a few years ago
mm-hmm.
on using DBT for bipolar disorder. So it was really a DBT skills training group.
Mm-hmm.
So people weren't getting individual therapy. They were just getting the skills part, the group part of DBT. The trial that I conducted showed that people were experiencing, after attending group, they were experiencing fewer depressive symptoms.
Mm-hmm.
Their hospitalizations reduced, so their emergency visits as well as actual hospitalizations because of mental health problems.
Mm-hmm.
And it just really showed to be an effective group. They're also doing research on and using DBT for substance abuse, for depression, for adolescents with bipolar disorder,
mm-hmm.
ADHD, oppositional defiant disorder. There's all sorts of research going on right now. In terms of my own clinical practice, I really am a DBT therapist nowadays. So if somebody comes into my office with, for example, social anxiety,
mm-hmm.
automatically I start thinking about, okay, I have to teach this person mindfulness. And maybe, you know, there's a relationship that they had problems with a few years ago that we need to process and get some acceptance going on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's just kind of the lens that I see everything through nowadays. So regardless of diagnosis, my thoughts immediately go to what DBT skills can I teach this person?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really just applicable to everything.
Yeah. And interestingly, mindfulness has really become sort of a trend almost in our society. Outside of psychotherapy, just in general, you know, everyone's talking about stress reduction.
I hope though that it's not a trend.
Yeah.
I hope it's a lasting trend. I hope that this is us just finally figuring out, catching on to what the Eastern world has known for thousands of years, that this is just a healthier way of living our lives. It's just a way of living a higher quality of life
mm-hmm.
and reducing our emotional suffering.
Yeah, and you know, it's interesting because I think we tend to think that only certain people are attracted to things like meditation and mindfulness. So when a patient comes to you, how do you go about almost selling them on mindfulness if they're not quite interested already?
Yeah, it really depends, and it's really funny because sometimes I find that the people that I'm a little bit reluctant to talk about mindfulness with,
mm-hmm.
Because I worry that they're not going to really take to it.
Yeah.
Sometimes those are the people that really surprise me, and they're the ones that latch right on to it and love it. But I really, I stay away from any kind of religious overtones, so I don't mention the word Buddhism.
Yeah.
And to me, it's so, I mean, that's where mindfulness has its roots, but it's so disconnected from Buddhism anyways, just in terms of, you know, you don't need to know anything about Buddhism in order to practice mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
But definitely that would be something that would scare somebody off, possibly. I also stay away from talking about meditation.
Yeah.
Because even though mindfulness is a form of meditation, I find that people often have those stereotypical ideas in their head about what meditation is that
yes.
can scare them away from mindfulness as well.
Mm-hmm.
So those are really the two main things that I stay away from. And then just depending on, you know, what I know about the person at that point, I'll give them examples of how they can use mindfulness in their life. I really try to personalize it for them. So if this is somebody who has depression and they tend to spend a lot of time thinking about the past, which isn't unusual,
mm-hmm.
Then I'll explain to them and help them see how much of their suffering they are creating themselves by spending so much time dwelling and ruminating on the past.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, teach them about mindfulness, which is about living in the present moment and accepting their experience, which is going to help reduce that suffering.
Mm-hmm. Interesting, because just the way you're talking right now, it almost sounds like going to someone to learn meditation, you know, and
uh-huh.
you don't associate this with going to a therapist.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and I think so, like you said, it is becoming much more common, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, similar to relaxation techniques and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
In terms of the way we would teach it, only way above and beyond relaxation techniques, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, sometimes mindfulness has the beneficial side effect, as I like to put it, of helping people to relax. But it's so much more than that.
Yeah. So how do you teach it?
How do I teach it?
Yeah.
I actually start off usually by introducing it to people in an informal way.
Mm-hmm.
So there's two types of mindfulness practices. There's formal and informal practices.
Mm-hmm.
I find that people tend to take to it a little bit more open-mindedly if I teach them informal practices first.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would entail something like, you know, teaching people how to incorporate mindfulness into their lives on a day-to-day basis.
Mm-hmm.
So bringing mindfulness into things that they would be doing, tasks that they would be doing anyways in their normal daily life. So, for example, walking their dogs, playing
mm-hmm.
with their children, having a conversation with somebody, driving mindfully, watching TV mindfully. And then I break that so we would pick one activity,
mm-hmm.
and I would break that down into kind of step-by-step for the person so that they would understand it more in-depthly.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, if you choose to listen to music mindfully, you're listening to the music, you're doing that just one thing at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So you're listening to music, you're not doing anything else. You're paying your full attention to it. So when you notice your attention wander, you bring your attention right back as soon as you can.
Mm-hmm.
And then you practice acceptance with whatever comes up for you. So if something interrupts you, if something distracts you from the music, you don't judge it. You don't judge yourself for being distracted.
Mm-hmm.
You just notice, okay, there's the telephone ringing. Or there's my kid coming in interrupting my mindfulness practice.
And you don't get upset.
Pardon?
And you don't get upset.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, and it's not even about not getting upset. It's about not judging, which is going to make you less likely to be upset.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's going to eliminate the possibility, I think, of you being upset.
Right.
But then if you jump into judgment and you do get upset as a result of that, then you just acknowledge your emotion. Okay,
mm-hmm.
I'm feeling frustrated right now because my child has just come in and interrupted my practice.
Yeah.
So it becomes more about acceptance, which, again, reduces the amount of pain in our lives.
Okay.
So that's how I usually start off with people, because I find that that kind of opens them up a little bit more to it.
Okay.
And then gradually, as we go on, I would teach them more formal practices.
We just have a few minutes left. Why don't you tell the listeners a little bit more about where they can find more information?
So I have actually written 5 books on DBT.
Mm-hmm.
I'll just mention 2 of them really quickly. My most recent one is called Calming the Emotional Storm. and that just came out in March. And basically it walks people through the DBT skills, including mindfulness,
mm-hmm.
And teaches you how to apply them to your daily life. My last book, the fifth book, is actually coming out in January of 2013,
mm-hmm.
and it's called DBT Made Simple. And that's actually a book to teach practitioners, so clinicians, psychologists, or whoever, how to use the DBT skills with their clients. So how to teach DBT skills to their clients and make it applicable to the illnesses and issues that they're dealing with.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. So I'll post the rest on the blog so it's available for our listeners.
Great.
Thank you so much, Sherry, for talking with us.
Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it, Joy.